gas tanker southbound San Diego Freeway access. All responding units identified.
LA 7 Mary 3 and 4 responding.
10-4, 7 Mary 3.
And here we are, consistently inconsistent yet again, with a new episode of the Crossover Show with myself, Motor Cop, and my good buddy, Happy Medic. Happy, how are you, sir?
I do fantastic. How are you, my good friend?
I am very well, thank you much for asking. So, I received a phone call today, long about, I don't know, noon-ish, and it was you.
It was me. I was at the desk, the captain desk. That I occupy most of the day, and something has been bothering me on my commute home from work. And I was gonna
say something about one of those pillows you have to sit on. You know, if something was bothering you, like a
little donut.
Oh,
luckily, I have to run downstairs to where the gold is often enough that I don't really get uncomfortable in my chair.
Ah, okay. I interrupted. I apologize.
Yeah, no, but I had this question, so that's why I called you on the phone, and I said, well, first of all, I asked you to say your real-life last name as Tom Brokaw.
Yeah, what was that about?
Well, I listen to a radio show in the mornings where they have a voice guy, and the voice guy very often says difficult words as Tom Brokaw because Tom Brokaw has trouble with certain letters. And it was just, it was on my mind while the phone was ringing, you answered, and Tom Brokaw. So I welcome anyone, you know, to try to say the word parallelogram as Tom Brokaw right now. You're all trying to imagine how to do it. It's just funny. But after the phone call, we both got home from work and put up on the Facebooks and the Twitter machines that we were doing a show, and people are actually asking us questions.
I've got a handful of them myself. People actually look forward to us doing our little brand of online shenanigans.
Online shenanigans. So first I want to get to the serious question, and it regards signage. When I'm driving down the road and I see a sign, the road I'm on off in the distance that says speed limit 55, does that mean as soon as I can see the sign, that's the speed limit, or at the sign, that's the speed limit? What's the rule?
Are we talking about a highway, or I'm sorry, a freeway, or a highway, or a roadway? They're all different.
Okay, well, the specific question I have is for something different. I want to get to that. I'm on a roadway, and
like in town, in city, and whatever.
I'm in San Francisco.
Okay.
And I'm tooling along, and I'm pretty sure, let's say I'm pretty sure it's 40.
Okay.
Last I saw it was 40. I see a sign in the distance that says 35.
Uh-huh.
Is it 35 as soon as I can see the sign?
Is there an intersection between you and the sign you can see?
I imagine it matters, so I'll say yes.
And is the speed limit on your particular latitudinal and longitudinal positioning where you can see the sign from, is it the same speed limit as what you are approaching?
Well, I was at 27 degrees, 38 minutes, 10.265 seconds north.
Uh-huh.
Latitude and longitude. Shapes and colors, MC. Shapes and colors.
Let's
go with the argument that no, it's a different speed limit.
Okay, if it's a different speed limit and you're going into a faster, slower, whatever, it will be typically from the intersection preceding the speed limit sign is where that speed limit takes effect, because what we have is called to justify our use of radar and or LIDAR is you have to have a traffic and engineering survey, and they cover roadways, you know, if it's Main Street between First and 7th Avenue, and then from 7th to 12th, it goes up 10 miles per hour. So in between 7th and 12th is where the 45 mile per hour speed limit will be. But let's say in between 1st and 7th, there's a, I don't know, a fire station in an elementary school, and it's going to be 25 miles per hour.
That makes perfect sense.
I apologize.
Now, the reason I thought of this is on my commute home, we have a Diamond Lane carpool lane. And the carpool lane during my hours of the commute, you know, you got to have at least two people in the car.
The HOV lane.
That's right. HOV standing for hot oven.
No.
Helicopter.
No.
Helium.
No, no, no. High occupancy vehicle.
Oh, that was way off. To quote one of the greatest motion pictures of all time. Yeah, it's carpool lane.
Yes, carpool lane.
Now, as I'm coming home, there are signs that say carpool lane ends in 1 mile. Carpool lane ends in 1/2 mile. If I can see the sign that says carpool lane ends,
mm-hmm.
can I get in that lane?
No.
I have to wait till the sign?
Yep. It's funny you mention that because on
there's no intersection, MC.
Well, the diamonds are on the roadway every 10th of a mile.
Oh, they're painted. You mean they paid attention when they did that?
Mostly, I would assume so. Yes.
Okay.
I have a similar experience on my commute home, and every time I get close to going in that lane, I'm like, I can. The sign's almost here. I can almost do it. And then I wait till the sign passes because if I was on the same roadway and I saw somebody jump in, you know, quarter mile early to start passing traffic, I would absolutely stop them and give them a ticket.
Yeah, I would say it's probably an 1/8 of a mile because I got bad eyes. But now I know exactly where that sign is because there's a ton of construction going on. So what you're saying is if my car drives over one of those diamonds, it's still technically the carpool lane?
Correct. I'll give you the 1/10 of a mile buffer zone between the last diamond and the sign because I'm a giver.
You are a giver. Now, the good news is, and I can hear Mrs. MC laughing in the background. I love that she only laughs at the part where you're a giver. That's nice. So what you're saying is if tomorrow on my drive home, if I see a diamond and then a big stretch until the sign says end, it's safe to say I can go ahead and pull in there without being in danger of getting that $300-something ticket.
I can tell you that I would give that leeway, but I can't speak for the California Highway Patrol.
Well, now you're a motor officer. You have no heart. You crush souls.
True. True.
You
but
crush souls for pleasure.
Also true.
So what you're saying is if I'm kind of in that area of it's ending, whatever, not egregious. If I come flying up there from a mile away, you're going to hit me.
Absolutely. Easy. Absolutely.
Yeah. Like everybody else that goes flying past me.
Right.
Because, of course, there's major construction where I am.
Right. And there's all the time.
There's no place for the highway patrol to sit and eyeball this section. So I don't even know why I'm nitpicking it. But you know what? I'm a responsible motorist.
Well, and us sneaky motor officers have been known to split lanes in order to get up on unsuspecting individuals.
And the good news is that where I am, because it's such a straightaway, maybe you folks in Kansas know what I'm talking about, we can see you coming from literally more than a mile away.
Can we risk offending people in Kansas right now?
Yeah.
Nobody in Kansas listens to us.
There's no place like home.
There is no place like home, and they also don't listen to us. So, you know, I'm throwing out a challenge to Kansas right now. If you're listening to the show and you're from Kansas, not even in Kansas. We'll say from Kansas.
No. I'm going to go in Kansas.
Oh, okay. See? Now who's crushing souls? Who's the rigid one right now? That's you. You are – I am rubbing off on you right now.
Okay, you brought up rigid and rubbing off.
Thank you.
Really need to bring up the explicit tag already.
Thank you.
Even though we're barely getting into it.
And by the way, my lovely bride is – I'm not even going to tell you now. I was going to tell you, and now I can't.
is she topless again? Every show. Every show, whether I'm in the room or not.
Oh, you know, someday I'm going to tell you exactly what just happened. Holy shit, that was funny. Oh, I wish I could share this with the home viewers.
What I was going to say, MC. You need to learn radio bits.
What's
happening?
She's opening.
Only has like two listeners a week.
She is opening a Frosty Adult homemade beverage for me.
Ooh, what do you got?
I got the smoked scotch, my friend. Smoked scotch ale.
Oh, delicious.
It is indeed.
That smoked scotch from More Beer. Morebeer.com, by the way. If you go online.
Free plug for More Beer.
Yes, free plug for More Beer. If you go online in the offer code, if you type in crossover show, they'll actually charge you an extra $3. but no, guys, you've heard us talk about it before. If you've ever even thought of home brewing, do it. You've waited too long.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm brewing every 2 weeks now, and it's just a wonderful couple hours of solace. You go outside, well, outside, inside, doesn't matter. You take the time, you brew. It's wonderful. I've got the tall red ale in the keg right now.
And who's on the label for your tall red ale?
Oh, it'd be Scarlet, of course.
Yeah, good man.
Has to be. Now, a quick shout out to a couple of my friends. MC, as you know, segue. Alert, segue. As you know, last weekend I went to Baltimore for a conference.
I do.
Those of us on the EMS side, we have conferences.
It was sadly lacking in Twitter traffic, by the way. I was disappointed in a lot of you.
Well, I'll tell you what, buddy. It's amazing when you actually have stuff going on. Getting on the Twitter machine proves difficult.
I don't want to hear your excuses.
I'm still going to give them to you.
All right, let me know when you're done.
We usually have two people that frequent these events, two very close friends. One is Mr. Chris Kaiser from LifeUnderTheLights.com, and the other is Miss EpiJunkie from PinkWarmDry.com. Two great EMS bloggers, paramedics, very close friends. Both of them gingers. Neither of them
daywalkers
were at the conference.
Oh,
it was a non-ginger conference.
That's not good.
Now, the other thing about EpiJunkie, I'll tell you, is she is a redhead, and she is, correct me if I'm wrong, Epi, she probably will, 6'2".
Wow.
Maybe 6'3". So whenever we would go to a bar, and the waitress would say, "What can I get you?" And I would say, "I'd like a tall red, because I'm ordering a tall red ale." She would punch me in the arm. So when I brewed the red ale, I thought, oh, it'd be great to, yeah, she would literally fly to California and shoot me in the face if I put her on the label. So with EpiJunkie out and the wife not a redhead, it fell, of course, to Scarlett Johansson.
By default, really.
By default. I mean,
I find it interesting that your bride comes after EpiJunkie, by the way.
Well, my wife's not a redhead.
I'm, you know, they make hair dye.
If I ever make a brown ale, then she'd be on there. Don't think I haven't tried.
I don't think you've tried hard enough.
Well, obviously not.
Yeah.
But it's not an easy thing.
This is true.
Yeah, I think the last time I had her almost talked into it, she was pregnant. And you can't do the hair dye thing, you know.
True.
When you got the bun in the oven, something about, I don't know, birth defects, whatever.
Lame.
Yeah.
All right, get back on track.
That was my main question. It's like, when I see the sign, am I supposed to follow the rules when I see the sign? Or you guys are making it more difficult than it needs to be, okay? Is there an intersection between me and the sign? There's an engineering survey. I'm not an engineer. I'm not a surveyor.
Well, see, you don't need to be concerned with the engineering survey. That is what what municipalities and the state use to justify the posted speed limit. They actually go out and test how fast, usually about 100 cars will go, and they'll take the 85th percentile and they'll go just below that, whatever that is. So if it's, you know, the 85th percentile is 37 miles per hour, they'll make the speed limit 35.
So wait a second. Hold on. Stop the presses. So these guys, the engineering survey isn't the guys looking at the road and figuring out what the safe speed is. They're just watching everybody go by.
Well, they take into consideration the makeup of the roadway, what kind of road it is. Is it a major arterial? Is it a commercial district? Are there schools? Are there bike lanes? Are there improved shoulders? I mean, a bunch of stuff goes into it. I deal with it only insofar as it justifies my ability to use my equipment on that roadway. So, for example, there's a road in my little corner of the world that technically probably should be a residential area, but because there's no the definition of a local road is less than a half mile between controlled intersections, be it a stop sign or a signal light, and less than 40 feet wide. Okay? That's your residential area. Your street is a local road. So by law, I'm not required to have a traffic and engineering survey because it meets the definition of a local road, and I can use radar, LIDAR, whatever, all the live long day. But this one particular road is longer than a half mile between controlled intersections, so I cannot run radar or LIDAR on that street at all. So we get complaints. People say, well, you know, people are doing, of course, they always overestimate. They're doing 80 miles an hour. They're not doing 80 miles an hour. They're probably going faster than they should be. But if it goes to court and they say it's a speed trap, that is the definition of a speed trap. A speed trap is where the posted speed limit doesn't match what the suggestions for the engineering survey, what the 85th percentile speed would be. So if it should, if the residential is 25, but everybody's doing 37, then technically the speed limit should be 35, not 25.
Make so what sense? You're saying is we all just need to start driving faster. And then the
you know,
speed
it's
limits will go up.
It's it kind of. I mean, it's that's where the other.
You heard it here first, folks.
Well, see, that's where the other parts of the survey come in. It's things not readily apparent, like schools, firehouses, churches.
Lead. A duck. Sorry, anybody that says churches twice deserves to get Monty Python.
Really? Apple cores! Really small
see
rocks!
See how I threw you off like that?
Oh no, you throw Monty Python out, I'm just gonna latch on and not let go.
Yeah.
All right, so I got a, I've got a Facebook question here.
All right, shoot. I told the cop to shoot.
You are clever. So, Ron King would like to know. He said, compare the amount of training each of us have in our respective positions.
Ooh, interesting. So each of us, not just the minimum qualifications. This is actually a really good question.
I thought so too.
Minimum qualifications kind of crappy. It's state of California, 1,095 hours you can be a paramedic. Well, Ed, MC, what basic education do you have for your job? We'll start there.
Okay, let's talk about what's required. What's the minimum requirement to be an officer in the state of California?
There you go.
High school diploma.
It's pretty much the same for firefighter.
And you have to be 20 and a half because at the time of being hired, because when you go through the academy, by the time you finish the academy, you'll be 21. And you have to be 21 to be a cop.
I imagine because you're going to bust people for alcohol.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, probably.
Whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm well past that age, my friend. So, yeah, and then once you get hired, go to the academy, and that is typically, I think nowadays, it's 6 months long. So whatever the hell, 40 hours a week minimum, because you always get there early and you always stay late.
26 weeks.
26 weeks?
26 weeks.
Times 40. How many hours is that? Quick.
What do you get? What the... Frack, that's 8,021. No, just 26 weeks.
Oh, that's... Wait,
that... works, doesn't it?
Huh?
That's what, 1,040 hours?
Oh, 1,040, thank you.
Can somebody... Yeah?
No, yeah, Kate, the wife confirmed that.
She confirmed it, or did she snap math it?
Sure.
Because I snap mathed it.
Okay.
I guessed, and I'm pretty sure I'm close enough that you won't challenge me.
I agree. That is correct.
Wow.
So how many hours did you say?
1,090 for paramedic school.
Well, you got us by 50. You got us by a whole week.
Yeah. Well, that includes a field internship.
Ah. All right.
So, but California also has some of the lowest requirements for EMTs and paramedics, which is kind of surprising.
Yeah, as ridiculously retarded as this state is, you'd think that they would demand more.
Well, you'd think one of the states that helped really create what paramedicine is would have higher requirements because they've been here longer, but no. It's actually the opposite. But minimum for example, minimum in the state of California, 1,090. When I took my paramedic program in New Mexico, it was 2,200.
That is significantly more.
Yes, but it was also part of a degree program, so it was two solid years of college courses that brought me to that point.
Now, would you say because you received your education in a different state that you have a leg up on somebody that went through a California program?
Not necessarily.
Well, I mean, let's not talk about it then and now. I mean, if you went through at the same time, you know, way back when, and you both get hired at San Francisco, which one is going to know their shit more?
Me.
Why?
Because my program was a pre-med program at the University of New Mexico.
All right.
It was part of the bachelor's program in EMS. They put us in all the classes with all the pre-med students. So I took microbiology with pre-med students. I took anatomy with pre-med students. I was put into the mindset that you are going to go to medical school. And when all my friends went to medical school, I went to paramedic school.
Well, then I agree. I think
as opposed to someone that halfway through my paramedic school graduated, I already had – now keep in mind I had 2 years before I went into the paramedic program of all my general studies. So I learned how to be a learner. I learned how to study. I learned how to absorb material. And then I had those 2 years in the paramedic program to really dial in what it was that I was doing.
You know what I learned in college?
How to drink.
I learned how to absorb alcohol.
Yes.
That's not all I learned, of course. Thank you very much. But, I did.
I learned.
You were getting serious there for a minute. I had to break it up.
I learned how to absorb alcohol and what that means.
God, you're a dork.
Yes. Now, interesting side note, not sure if we mentioned it on this show. You went to college with my wife.
Yes, I did. And when did we find that out?
Maybe a few months. No, we found that out, I think right after we met.
The first day we met.
That's right.
It was with, we were out with the blog stalker.
No, the two of you had an awkward moment.
No, negative. Negative.
Yeah.
Nope, you are incorrect, sir.
All right.
We got to talking about college, and I mentioned where I went, and you said, my wife went there. And I said, really? And I said, what year did she graduate? And you told me. I said, really? That's the year I graduated. Which school? And you told me. I was like, you were at my graduation.
Yeah, and that just was the tip of the iceberg of the Rod Serling.
Oh, God, yes.
Twilight Zone.
And that was a full lives. That was a full decade before you and I actually met.
Yes, which... And we've spoken many a time about the other strange things that that connect us.
Very odd.
Why we were, yeah. But as far as our educations, what did you? I mean, after police academy, they don't just hand you a bike. What did you do between when you got out and when you became a motor?
Many things. I've done. I can't say too much of it because I don't want to give too much away for obvious reasons, but. I spent a number of years in a number of different assignments, a lot in patrol, and 6 years ago I walked into the powers that be office for a completely unrelated reason and said, hey, you know, I got a quick question for you. And the powers that be said, I know you want to go to motor school. I'd never considered that before in my life. And I thought, all right, whatever, I'll give that a shot. So a number of months later, I went to a 2-week motor school, and that was by far the most difficult thing I've ever done in my career, to include the academy and going through the FTO, or field training officer program, both of which are many months long. That 2-week period in motor school is the most stressful thing I've ever done professionally. But I made it, and I graduated on a Saturday, and I went 10-8 on 2 days later on a Monday, and haven't looked back since. It'll be 6 years at the end of July that I've been on the bike, and I've got just a little over 600 hours of collision-specific investigation training.
In over 6 years?
Over a six-year period, yeah, and that includes basic, basic collision to, in the name box you put the person's name, to that I can figure out the speed of a vehicle that hits a pedestrian based on the launch distance of the pedestrian. I can tell you how fast a car was going based on the skid marks.
So if I told you a train left Chicago,
totally, dude, totally, yeah.
My training comes nowhere close to that.
It's very math heavy. It's very, very, it's all trig and calc and all that garbage.
Yeah, we do a lot of weight-based calculations in EMS. Some of our medications, dopamine, for example, the old days of lidocaine, folks will remember, all of it's based on weight. So we do a certain amount of micrograms per minute per kilogram. So we have to guess your weight, do the counts, all that kind of stuff. So it's some of what we do is math heavy. But as we've mentioned in other shows, I only have to do 24 hours of continuing education every year to keep my license. Anything I do above and beyond that is extra. Now, that also doesn't include all of the in-service training that I've done. So if we do a 2-hour ladder drill, that's not recorded anywhere. So how much training have I done? I have no idea.
It's interesting that a lot of the stuff that I do isn't recorded either, and I have the same requirement. The state of California post police officer standards and training, I do the same 24 hours. I mean, not the same, obviously, but the same number of required advanced officer training, and that's firearms, driving stuff, legal updates, junk like that, defensive tactics. But above and beyond those things, if I go to a conference or I go to a one-day training, they tell us to write it down, and it's what's called our hero sheet. So when we go to court, yeah, I know.
I'll bet it is.
Shut up. Curriculum vitae, I believe, is the dorky term for it.
Yeah.
Just so when you go to court, you can say, hey, I've been to this, that, the other thing. And it's a lot easier to get you basically confirmed as an expert in whatever it is you happen to be talking about.
Doesn't the helmet and the boots do that?
No. No, unfortunately.
That sucks.
Would that it did, but it does not.
All right. I know we've talked in the past about continuing education and things like that, but that was a great question, asking what our specific background.
I have another excellent, excellent question. Actually, I have two excellent Twitter questions.
All right, you go ahead, and then I've got one from the Facebook.
Okay, we'll do the brief one first, and then we'll do yours, then we'll come back to me. So, Twisted Smiley asked, people in power chairs, are they motor vehicle operators or pedestrians?
Oh, ooh, can I take this one?
Fire away.
Depends on where they are.
Negative, go ahead.
Oh.
Why do you say it depends where they are?
If they're in the street, their vehicles. If they're on the sidewalk, they're not. I'm just a fireman.
You are. Would you say you're just a fireman?
Just a fireman. I don't know. Here's the thing. It doesn't become my problem until they fall out of the chair.
Oh, it's funny that this question came up because recently we had a collision involving a small person. Child, not a little person, on a little.
I believe they prefer the term midget.
I don't think that's correct.
You don't think so?
I think it's little person.
Pretty sure it's midget. Dwarf. Little guy.
What if we could find a little person in Kansas? Oh my God.
I'm pretty sure I would pretty much just have to give up the show at that point.
Hang on. Yes, dear.
That's the Wizard of Oz that you're describing.
Yeah, we're describing the Wizard of Oz. She's correct.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right, never mind.
All right. The kid was on a the kid was very small, not on a bicycle, but he's on something that he scooted a lot. He sat on, but he just put one foot in front of the other and kind of scooted along. I think the thing's called a scoot, oddly enough.
You're using the word scoot a lot. I'm going to go with scoot.
We'll go with scoot. So we were trying to figure out, well, is that a vehicle? Is it a pedestrian? Is it a bicycle? So it's interesting that this question comes up because, at least in California, I'm going to go motor cop geeky on you. California Vehicle Code Section 467 defines a pedestrian as a person who is afoot or who is using any of the following: a means of conveyance propelled by human power other than a bicycle, the scoot, or an electric personal assistive mobility device.
Oh, come on.
So it's to answer Twisted Smiley's question, people in power chairs are considered pedestrians.
I call bullshit.
Take it up with the state, buddy.
Just because you can't walk doesn't mean that you can still be classified as a pedestrian for PC reasons. I'm sorry.
I don't think it's a PC reason. I think it's just a definition.
Exactly. So how is it that a pedestrian can be seated in a motorized chair? Can we just make a new classification for these people?
What do you mean, these people?
I mean these people in the motorized chairs. Let's say the kid's on a scoot and somebody walks into him. Now let's say the kid is on a scoot and somebody rolls into him in a power chair. Would that be handled differently?
Yeah, it'd be a battery.
It'd be a battery?
Yeah.
But it's a pedestrian.
Right. One person hits another person, it's a battery.
So a person walking hits the kid on the scoot, knocks him down, that's battery.
Yep.
It's not an oops, I'm sorry, are you okay?
Well, it's unwanted touching.
True.
See?
Hold on, MC. What I'm trying to say is that the person walking into the kid on the scoot, the kid's probably just gonna fall over.
Right.
A person in a power chair hits a kid on the scoot. That kid's going to get hurt. But it's going to be exactly the same because they're both classified as pedestrians.
Correct.
Bullshit.
You're wrong. How's that feel? Feels good.
It's what I do all day long. You have to remember, MC, that you get to tell people the law as a cop. As a paramedic, I get people to tell me the law, and I have to do what they say. So
again, I don't know how you can do that.
With a smile on my face, my friend. A smile on my face.
Long as
so
that
actually,
check, please.
That was a very good question about the motorized scooters, power chairs.
There you go.
The stuff like that. I've got a question here on the Facebook from Kristen Bernard, which touches on quite the lively topic in the EMS circles. Don't know if it is on the popo side. I've been seeing this topic quite a bit. She says, how do you feel, Popo, how do you feel about EMTs and medics being armed with the proper training and clearance? Good idea, lethal, non-lethal, both partners, too big a liability? Any other comments or ideas? What do you think about paramedics properly trained carrying weapons?
Personally, knock yourself out.
Professionally.
As long as they receive the same level of training and their policies reflect similarly to police policies with use of force, I don't have a problem with it at all. Now, I am also, let me add this caveat, I am not an administrator. and this is
we're very well aware of that.
Yeah, and this is not MCPD. I jokingly refer to my home as MCPD. So I'm the administrator here, but outside of that, And okay, the wife's the administrator too. Jeez. She's in the other room. Do you think I could get away with saying administrative assistant? Nope, apparently not.
Apparently not. Nope. I was going to say, only if there's eyeglasses and a hair bun involved. However, there might be.
Kind of leads me back to the earlier thing.
This is
going to
become a completely different show.
Yes, indeed. And I'm going to guess that you have a different opinion than me.
I do. I don't want my medics carrying weapons. That is not their responsibility. If they have a situation where they need weapons, I need you.
Okay, say we're not available. We're not there. Whatever.
Well, let's say my medics have a weapon. Now there's guaranteed to be at least one weapon in that altercation. They need to be focused on patient care. The same way that I don't need to train you, MC, on a whole bunch of different medical and fire skills, because your focus needs to be the safety of my crew. My crew's focus needs to be patient care. And if they go into a situation carrying weapons, then they are guaranteeing that weapons are in that situation. Now, instead of focusing on the patient, they have to focus on, is my weapon secure? Is my body in such a fashion that the weapon cannot be taken from me? You know, these are all concerns that you guys that carry the weapons around have to think about.
I hate to break it to you, but you guys carry weapons.
Such as?
You've got needles, you've got knives.
We don't have knives. We have needles. They're in a bag.
Okay, that's a weapon.
I'll tell you what, if there's anybody that wants to use a needle as a weapon that can figure out how to get it open before I have a chance to act against them without a weapon, I commend them for that. What I'm saying is, I'm talking about medics carrying guns. I'm talking about medics carrying concealed knives. I don't think it's a good idea.
So you guys don't. So your medics don't carry knives?
No.
What about those rip shears? Aren't those awfully pointy scissors?
They're not pointy. Our shears aren't pointy, number one.
Okay.
Number two, the rip shears, a 5-year-old pinky finger won't fit in there.
Okay.
So what I'm saying is, instead of the rip shears on my hip, let's put a gun there. You would not be doing a lot of things that my medics do with that gun on your hip, because it goes against you being able to protect that weapon. So now my guys carry a weapon into a scene, and they can't do their jobs. They just can't. There needs to be a separation. If they're in a rural setting where they can't get PD on scene for 10 minutes, I don't know what to tell you. I've been there. It sucks. But I know in the tussles I've been in, if I'd been carrying a weapon, I would have lost it. And I would have been hurt.
Well, you know, if you weren't such a pussy, then...
Hey. I'll say this. I ain't been beat up yet.
Atta pepper.
And I've never carried a weapon in my life, and I've not been beat up yet. So,
although you do, I've seen you shoot at the TAC Response conference a couple of years ago, and you didn't suck.
You've seen me shoot, but you've also seen me run. Which do you do better?
I'm gonna go with run.
But no, as far as medics and EMTs carrying weapons, training, clearance, I agree with you that if they have the training and they have the clearance, it's obviously better than some yahoo who decides, you know what, I'm going to bring my 38 to work today, and I'm going to put it under the seat of the ambulance just to be safe. That's a horrible idea. In certain circumstances, if we have, obviously tactical medics is a completely different circumstance. Public safety, if you're a trained police officer and paramedic, you have to do both roles. It's got to be difficult to be able to get in there and protect your weapon and still be able to reach around these patients and the things that we're doing in their family. And you can't really get that global view of the scene that you guys need as police officers to keep that scene safe and also get down and get the tunnel vision we need to be able to do adequate patient care. So if you have the resources, I need those abilities split. And where I am in the city, I think it's a bad idea.
All right. They got another question from the Twitter. It's from someone else, although it's clever. It's someone E1SE, looks like someone else. Have you or HM ever had to arrest slash treat anyone you didn't want to, or the reverse?
Every day.
Or the reverse, couldn't when you really wanted to.
Every day. We talked about this recently on the Happy Medic about kidnapping. When is treating a patient when they say no, kidnapping? At least once a shift, I have somebody who needs me and needs to see a doctor who adamantly refuses. I don't want to go. You can't make me do anything. I know my rights. Number one, that's the easiest way to spot someone who doesn't know their rights. Number two, I'm pretty sure anybody else in your situation would want this done to them. And number three, they're making a financial decision, not a medical decision. They don't want to have to pay the ambulance bill and the hospital bill. So that drives me insane. So those are the people that I want to help that I can't. The people that I have to help that don't need it or want it. How do I say this politely? The people that don't need me, the people that don't need me and my paramedics greatly outweigh the people that do. People in the United States are under the misconception that they can just call an ambulance whenever they want. I'm sorry. That's the law. Yeah, they can call an ambulance whenever they want. We're required by law to take them regardless of their chief complaint. So how often do I see people that I don't want to take care of? All the time. And it's not that I don't want to. It's that they don't need me to. So I'm not sure what to do. We get them in the back of the ambulance, we sit them down, we go to the hospital, and when I was treating patients, they would kind of look at me like, well, aren't you going to do something? It's like, I'm sorry, there's not a single piece of equipment or skill that I have that can help you, because there's nothing wrong.
That would just drive me. I would get incredibly frustrated by that.
I
have to give you kudos. You, and I've done it before, and I'm sure I'll say it again. But you handle that famously. You do it very, very well.
Well, in MC, and my new spot is CQI, I get to read all the charts that all my medics write on all the patients in the entire city and county of San Francisco. And I can tell you that you would be saying the same thing to every one of my people. They do an amazing job in the face of absurdity. And you're whistling.
I'm whistling?
Oh, Skype was whistling?
Skype, that was all Skype.
Jeez, Skype, thank you.
Jeez, yeah.
MC.
For me, no, I pretty much, I like arresting people when they need to go to jail. So I don't think I've ever arrested anybody that I didn't want to arrest. Because my, you know, profession, it's nice to be able to deliver consequences to people's actions with some form of immediacy. Now, the frustration comes in when it leaves my hands, or you know, the PD in general, and goes to the DA and the defense attorneys and the court system, and they do whatever it is they're going to do with it. And you know, it's frustrating when you put a lot of effort into an arrest and it either gets dealt down to, I mean, practically nothing, or just straight up not filed at all for whatever reason. That's incredibly frustrating. It takes a lot out of your motivation. A lot. You know, you put in 5, 6, 7, you know, sometimes hours, sometimes multiple days into trying to accomplish something and bring justice to, be it the people of the state or a specific victim, and to have somebody else say, I don't think we could get a conviction on this, so we're just going to go ahead and plead down to something else, or we're just not going to file it, you know, and we'll build something for the future. That pisses me off. And I've posted a number of times about it, that's why I like traffic so much, is, you know, 95% of the time when I stop somebody, I kind of play judge and jury right there, because the majority of my tickets, I don't go to traffic court. I go every so often, sometimes more frequently than others, but by and large, I win those cases. And if you don't go to court to fight it, then justice has been exacted, and that's great. I feel an incredible sense of purpose and accomplishment by enforcing the vehicle code. Yeah, they're infractions. Sometimes they're misdemeanors. On seldom occasions, they're felonies. But by and large, I'm dealing with very minor, you know, infraction type things, but that can certainly lead to, you know, heinous death and destruction. So no, I don't know that I've arrested somebody I didn't want to. As far as the reverse, not been able to arrest somebody when I wanted to, absolutely. But I guess this is kind of where, you know, your issues and mine kind of blend together, because there are laws, obviously, that I have to follow. Those are the laws of arrest. You know, give you a good example of a domestic issue where nobody's broken the law yet, but you can see it coming. It's foreshadowed. All we've got is, you know, a married couple yelling at each other, but nobody's hit anybody. It's not illegal for married people to yell at one another, but you can see the fear and terror in the wife's eye, and, you know, you beg her, just, you know, leave. Let's get you somewhere else before something, you know, really bad happens, and she won't go.
You know, MC, it's funny you bring that up. We see that on the EMS side as well. You guys, you know, PD will be there talking to him, talking to her, and there's that. You can just read people. Folks in our line of work, we can read people. It's not what they're saying. It's what their bodies are telling us.
Very true.
And I have very often told people in this situation, both men and women, you need to go back. You need to have 3 days of clothes packed and ready to walk out of this house so that when I come back here again, you and I are going to take that bag and you're going to go. You're going to have a trusted friend. You need to be ready to go. I can't give them any literature. Two reasons. Number one, I don't have it. Number two, if I leave it, that's only going to make the situation worse. But just trying to let these folks know that there's help out there, that there are organizations that can help you get back on your feet somewhere. And yet I'm not allowed to remove that person from that situation, even though I know it's in their best interest because they are adults, quote unquote, and allowed to make their own decisions. And it really, I'm sure you get the same thing, kind of like it's just going to happen again. And you tell them that, listen, I know you. You know me. We've been here before for the same reason. Who are we kidding? Let's do something about this. So it's nice to see that you have the same frustrations in those particular situations.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Is if you guys are at a scene that I've been called to, and there's some sort of domestic violence issue, if they required a medic to come, somebody's going to jail.
Well, hold on now. If they required a medic to come and they require a medic to treat, those are two completely different things.
Not in my line of work. It isn't.
Because people call me for BS all the time. Now, if a neighbor calls and says she's getting the crap beat out of her.
Oh, we have the tag. Come on.
If she's getting the shit beat out of her, says the neighbor. And the cavalry gets there. We've got PD, we've got a motor unit, we've got an engine, we've got an ambulance. We get there, and she's saying nothing happened. Although, judging by her hair and the way her shirt is pulled a little to one side, something did happen. But I've got nothing to treat. She's refusing my care. That's different than me just being there, buddy. I hate to say it.
You're wrong.
Actually, this is my area of expertise. If she does not have an assessable or treatable injury, I can't prove medically that she's injured.
You can't prove medically that she's injured, but I can articulate that she has been the victim of domestic battery.
So let's go the other direction. Let's say that you call me in because you see those things. I get there. I've got nothing to assess. She says nothing happened. My chart, my record, my medical record that's going to go to court is going to say I can't see anything, and she's saying nothing happened. Does that hurt you or help you down the line?
I'm not concerned about down the line in those situations. I'm concerned about that night. And if I can articulate, if I can form the opinion that and can further articulate that I believe that she was the victim of domestic abuse based on the totality of the circumstances, her mussed hair, a ripped shirt, a witness, be it an audio or a visual witness, depending on what that witness says they saw and or heard. If I can stack all of these things together and show that I believe that she was the victim of domestic violence, the state of California allows me, even if it's a misdemeanor, which typically I can't arrest if I haven't witnessed it. Typically, for a misdemeanor committed not in my presence, I need a citizen's arrest, which means you, John Q. Public, has to sign a little form and tell, you know, Johnny Dirtbag, hey, you're under arrest for whatever, because the cop didn't see it. But the California law allows me to make an arrest in this case for a misdemeanor not committed in my presence because it's domestic violence. Now, does that mean that she's not going to bail hubby out in 12 hours? Of course not. Is it ever going to get filed? Of course not. But did I prevent any immediate retribution? Quite possibly.
We'll never know. It goes back to proving a negative.
True, but I would rather go home at the end of my shift knowing that I potentially prevented further injury than, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand, and I guess we're looking at it in two different ways because I have the power to remove the victim, whereas you have the power to remove the assailant. And if the victim won't come with me to be removed from the scene, there's zero I can do.
Right.
But you have all the power in the world to say, hey, you bad guy, you're coming with me.
And the nice thing about it is even if the quote-unquote victim, because, you know, a lot of times they no longer want to be a victim, at least in as far as a court case may be concerned, they can straight up say, I don't want you to arrest my husband. And occasionally you'll hear, I do not want you to arrest my wife. And I will tell my suspect and soon to be in custody, hey, this isn't his or her decision. This is mine. If, you know, your wife doesn't want me to do anything, but guess what? It ain't her choice. It's mine. And you're going to jail.
I would love to be able to say those words. It's not their choice. It's mine. You make me so jealous.
All right, we are approaching the 1 hour mark. I have one question left.
All right, a quick one then.
Well, I don't know how quick this is going to be. You let me know if this is something we should address in a future episode. The Wedgie on Twitter says, "Can the Happy Medic please explain how the private versus fire department ambulance thing works? In South Australia, we're it for all of 980,000 square kilometers."
That is a whole series of shows. I would have to belay that question for the next show, MC. I apologize.
All right.
What I would tell the Wedgie is go back to go to happymedic.com. In the sidebar on the right-hand side, about a third of the way down, is the logbook. Go back to the fall of 2009 during the big healthcare debate and read some of the posts that Mark Glencourse and I exchanged about fire-based EMS and more of a national health service model like you have there in Australia. And also listen for the next episode of The Crossover, where I will completely put MC to sleep. discussing the difference between the municipal and the private EMS services in America. How's that for an answer?
You know, I will make sure to have plenty of beer on hand, and perhaps I'll take the laptop down by the Xbox.
That's not a bad idea. Just make sure you go,
Oh, yeah, yeah. Wow, that's
really?
That is interesting.
Fascinating.
So, Mr. Happy Medic, any parting shots?
Bang.
Wow. Well, thanks for joining me for yet another consistently inconsistent edition of the Crossover Show, sir.
As always, great fun.
Indeed. And so where can we find you online?
TheHappyMedic.com. You can find me on Twitter, TheHappyMedic, Facebook, TheHappyMedic, email, TheHappyMedic@gmail.com. I'm glad I got all those when I did. pretty much anywhere on the interwebs, just TheHappy and Medic, and you'll find me.
Well, very nice.
Hi, MC. Where are you at?
I'm right behind you. Look behind you right now.
Oh my God.
Oh.
I'm on the toilet. How did you get?
We know everything. All right. You can find me on Twitter at MotorCop1, the number one, and on my blog there, MotorCopBlog.com, Facebook, ironically enough, MotorCop. You can also find me if you are a gamer on Xbox Live, ironically again. MotorCop is the name. So there you go. Another successful show, sir. Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Andy Garcia.
Oh, dude. Beautiful. See? Beautiful head of hair.
That's how I'm going to put you to bed, my friend.
That's good looking out, sir. You have a pleasant weekend, and we'll chat soon.
You do the same, MC. Be safe out there, buddy.
Take care.
Crossover is for information only and should not be considered established law or policy unless cited. Your hosts are simply tired of talking to us, the wives, so we just let them talk to each other. Win-win. Offer not valid in all territories, board wherever wine is not shipped. If rash develops, please call 911 and ask for Angelo. If desire to approve EMS lasts for more than 4 hours, consult your service manager on how to make it a reality. Please follow all local protocols and guidelines. If you try to defend doing something stupid by citing a guy who uses a cartoon and calls himself happy, perhaps you're in the wrong line of work.
Squad 51 returning to quarters.
Squad 51.